Welcome to Love Bonds. My name is Terry DiMatteo, and I'm a relationship and couple counselor. You can learn more about me by visiting opendoortherapy.net. This program focuses on the power and challenges of romantic love and attachment, with a special focus on infidelity and affair recovery. In fact, most of my practice is focused on helping couples repair in the aftermath of infidelity. As a result of my expertise being in the area of affair and infidelity recovery, I am very tuned in, hyper aware of all of the pop culture and media orientation toward affair and infidelity. When I'm in the grocery line, I see the headlines of this or that celebrity or politician where an affair has just been exposed, or there's an accusation of an affair. I see it on the television. I hear it on the radio. And I also am aware and tuned in to other experts in the field and pay very close attention to their understanding of this complicated matter. But it generally is a vast contrast to the deeper, more comprehensive, more complete understanding of what takes place in infidelity that the general public and the magazines and the speakers and the television really miss. So I'd like to unpack that for you today in this segment. So this will come as no surprise to you. This is a framework we've all heard and understand and hear about all the time. It's very standard in a basic understanding of infidelity, and it goes something like this: that there is a primary pair, a committed pair, a couple, oftentimes married, but not always, and they're the unit. And within that unit, one party has stepped outside the relationship and formed either a quick or a longer standing connection with someone outside of the relationship. They have, in a very real sense, betrayed their partner and stepped outside the relationship. So this triangle, we might say, has three parts. And if we were writing a script together, and these were three roles in the drama in the theater, we would really easily be able to determine the character traits of each of the three based on the magazines and the television and the media portrayal of who's who in the affair. And so we have the big one, the one that gets a lot of attention is the cheat, the cheater. This language is very problematic, but they're sometimes called the wayward spouse, the one who strayed. And this person would be attributed character traits of immorality, a liar, a cheat, one who betrayed, someone who's sort of thoughtless, heartless, a person who harms, a person who does damage, a person who doesn't care. All these terrible traits are attributed to the person in what we call, and I'm putting my hands up in quotes, the cheater role. And if you listen to the media or read a magazine article, you might conclude that this person has no redeeming qualities, and we might say is just simply all bad in the simplest portrayal of this. The other party, the one who did not participate in the outside connection, is sometimes referred to as the injured party, the betrayed spouse. And this person is sort of often portrayed as somewhat of a victim, something of innocence. They are in pain. They have been harmed. They have been done wrong by the cheat. And they are clearly in a lot of pain, and that is true. That's actually accurate. There is a lot of pain involved in this kind of thing. They are also viewed almost, you might say, with the, maybe this one might have the white hat on and the cheater would have the black hat on. And there is this simplistic framing of these two parties, one being all good and innocent and blameless, and the other being demonic and problematic and almost criminal, you might say. I've heard the word perpetrator used for the person who cheats, which is really quite strong and almost suggests a kind of criminality. And that the third party in the triad is often called the mistress, which is quite gender specific, thinking that the mistress is always the female. It gets a little tricky because the outside party is sometimes a male. If the woman in the primary relationship is straying, then her partner may be male. Not always. There's also a same-sex infidelity, of course. But this is just the general sort of standard cultural framing. And this person is also viewed as immoral, lacking in values or morals. You sometimes hear this person called the homewrecker, a vixen, sex craze, this kind of thing. And these three simplistic images or framing or character traits are very simplistic and really do not capture a full and complete deeper understanding of infidelity and affair in a way that I have seen in my office, which is what I would like to share with you today. In those examples, the language, the lexicon, the framing simply doesn't work. And it's much more nuanced than that. And we are talking in all three instances of the triad of human beings that have real feelings and struggles, and they're all hurting in some way. And let's take a look at it from the counselor's point of view, my point of view as an affair recovery expert, to kind of break it down. So before we can do that, we have to back up a little bit. And let's take a look at the romantic relationship and its functionality. What is it supposed to do for you? The romantic relationship, marriage, being committed, being partnered, is supposed to provide something. It's supposed to meet some needs. And those needs are essentially, if you want to make it very simple, to provide love and protection. We might say it very much replicates a relationship between a mother and a child in terms of providing care, having the person's back, really being invested in the welfare of your offspring in the same way you might be invested in the welfare of your partner. It is to loyalty would be very important. Where each person in the romantic pair has peace of mind, certainty, absolute certainty that they are loved, that they matter to the other, and that if they're hurting or struggling or having a hard time, that their mate, their partner, their husband, their wife, their girlfriend, their boyfriend is there for them, and they can turn to their partner and receive a shoulder to cry on, a warm hug, a supportive role. Now, that would not be the extent of it, because those characteristics, those traits, those experiences could put someone in what we might call the best friend category. And I do not subscribe to the notion of the best friend model of marriage. When someone has the traits of the best friend, then they're in the friend zone. The partner is also a romantic partner, And this piece is very important. They're not just your best friend. There's a sexual, flirty, exciting, intimate aspect to the romantic pair. So if we break it down into two strains, the committed pair, the couple, has two important strains. One is emotional closeness, something like a friend. I care for you. You're each other's most important other person, a primary person. No one else ranks as important to each other than the romantic partner. The second strain, the second layer, would be sexual connection and a sharing of physicality, physical affection, hugging, cuddling, kissing, flirting. That person can stimulate those feelings of excitement and the little flutter inside and this yearning and desire. And with those two things, emotional and sexual intimacies, we might say that together in combination, a bond is formed that keeps the pair attached and connected. And when that bond is strong and powerful in both the emotional and sexual, and they overlapped and they're intertwined, then those pairs generally stay loyal to one another, and outside parties cannot really get into the relationship because those partners are continually turning to one another for their romantic and intimacy needs. It's being met within the relationship, which is what the relationship, a romantic relationship, is designed to do. We might say it's functioning properly. Now, as we all know, romantic relationships ebb and flow. There are times of disconnect. There are times of high stress. Things change. People get ill. They lose their job. They struggle. They have in-law problems, challenges with children, and life gets in the way. And unless the couple keeps up, maintains the romantic piece of their relationship, the critical emotional sexual connection, the primary bond, the marriage, can sometimes get, I might say, a little soggy. The bond weakens. There can be some estrangement, some disconnect. Very often, I find that couples that come to me and I ask them, what was going on in your relationship before the affair? What was taking place in your marriage, in your relationship, before the infidelity occurred? And they will often share stories of living like roommates, being very disconnected, a lot of separateness, avoiding conflict. In other words, this bond broke. And in the breaking of the bond or the weakening of the bond, of sexual and emotional intimacy, a space grows between them, a chasm, a disconnect. And it's in this space that an affair can take root. And so all it really takes, and this is something the sensationalized media misses, is something as seemingly insignificant, a slight, as a person outside the relationship paying attention, being noticed in that realm of romanticism. Someone else saying, you look nice today, and that color brings out your eyes. I found what you said at the meeting very intelligent. I think you're funny. And the person who's feeling lonely in the marriage is very susceptible, vulnerable. And this could be both parties. The relationship, let's say, becomes susceptible, vulnerable to the attentions of an outside party. You will, I in all my years practicing as an affair and couples counselor who helps people restore from infidelity, I really have not seen anyone who intentionally, with purpose and intent, seek out an affair. They people just don't do this. But what does happen is there's a vulnerability, a loneliness of feeling ignored or unloved, or basically like they don't matter. I don't matter to my partner. They have turned away from me. They're not there for me. They don't really love me. They don't care. I'm alone in this connection. And this could very much be both parties feeling this. It does not only mean the one who strays, but when someone in the workplace or at the gym or online or any place you bump into other people starts to notice a lonely spouse or a person who's feels neglected or unloved, and the two of them have not. The two of them in the relationship have not reached for the other to tap on the shoulder and say, I miss you. I'm lonely. I feel this disconnect between us. Something's not working here. I'm afraid. These more vulnerable feelings, they just are simply susceptible, vulnerable, in a kind of a weakened state that when a person they come across starts to give attention, bit by bit, a bond forms. Or the same thing, even if it's maybe a one-night stand or a business trip, there's something at home, there's something in the realm of the primary relationship, you might say the home, that is either very pressured, very problematic, very intense, very deeply troubled, conflicted, and or weakened in a state of disconnect or loneliness or estrangement. Any of those two things, it gets kind of lopsided. And so the other realm, the other world, with someone paying attention and stimulating those feelings of love and care and attention, that realm with the slowly forming affair can have a feeling of you might say lightness or play or unencumbered, or it's easy, it's light, and that person who's in pain is vulnerable, is susceptible to that. It's almost like you might say a pressure valve on a steam heater or a faucet that has the steam. You, in the old fashioned ways, you turn the knob and the steam would be released. The affair, the infidelity, the newly forming connection can feel like a release valve. And escape, basically. And then there's lots of ways to escape, right? People escape with alcohol, they escape with drug use, they become shopaholics, gamblers, anything that is escapist. And an affair becomes this kind of thing. And so in this understanding of the triad, in a way that I see it as an affair and couples counselor, rather than attributing these almost demonic or offensive traits to all the parties involved, I would say what's more accurate is that the relationship, and since the relationship has two people in it, the relationship has weakened, and the two parties within the relationship have each contributed to this weakening of the state of their marriage or committed relationship, leaving them vulnerable to the attention, the responsiveness of someone outside their relationship. And this is really what's going on in infidelity. And so to repair from that in a comprehensive way, a thorough way, would mean to explore and understand what was taking place in the outside relationship, what needs for intimacy, for emotional and sexual connection were not being met in the marriage, and why they didn't reach for one another during times of heightened stress, loneliness, pressure, what was going on before, prior to the infidelity that set the stage, that left the relationship and the people within it vulnerable to the attentions of another. And any kind of affair recovery that does not include going back to the relationship prior to the time of infidelity, I would argue is incomplete. And then the aim of restoration is to understand what needs were being met in the outside relationship that were not being met in the marriage or the committed relationship. And it's wild, but I have seen again and again that the nature of the outside relationship, whatever need is being met within that, is almost a direct reflection of where the vulnerability is in the marriage or the committed union. For example, if the outside relationship is based on a sexual union, the affair, the outside relationship was based on feeling attractive, sexual union, it's very likely, highly likely, that the sexual union, sexual intimacy of the married pair would be the source of where the bond has broken. It's a mirror. It serves as like a mirror. If the outside relationship is emotional in nature, you're feeling the person in the affair is feeling close and connected, understood. They can talk openly. They share information. There's an intimacy in the affair relationship, and it's predominantly or solely emotional. It's very likely, very, very likely that the primary relationship or the married relationship is lacking in emotional closeness. These two things are intricately linked, and exploring the affair connection can help identify where the lack is or where the couple got off track. Where did they lose connection? What happened here? The person who engaged in the affair is engaged in both. They have, let's say, fallen in love with the affair partner, and that is longer term or long standing. That suggests that the primary relationship, the love relationship, is pretty damaged, pretty beaten. That it has has very few elements required to sustain it. So to recap this, the romantic committed relationship, the marriage, exists to perform a function, to meet needs. And what's unique about the romantic relationship that's very different from any other relationship you can think about, a parental relationship, a sibling relationship, a colleague relationship, a friendship, is it has this combination of emotional and sexual intimacy that the partners turn to each other for their romantic needs. They turn to the partner for the flirting, to feel attractive, to feel loved, that the partner is there through thick and thin. They have their back, and they help them, each other, regulate different difficult emotions. And when those needs are met within the romantic relationship, I sometimes say it is sealed tight like Tupperware, that any kind of offering or flirting or noticing from an outside party might be flattering, but does not put the couple at risk. You might say, oh, thank you for that compliment, but I'm married, or thanks for noticing. And then you go home to your husband or wife or partner, and knowing full well that that is your romantic relationship. So I hope that explains it a little deeper, more sophistication, more nuanced than the standard triad. These are just three people with needs to be loved, to be responded to be heard, to matter to someone, to feel cared for and loved. This is the job or the function of the romantic pairing. It is not as simplistic and black and white and good and bad as the newspapers and media and celebrity stories will have you believe. So, you've been listening to me, Terry DiMatteo. This program is Love Bonds, and you can learn more about me at opendoortherapy.net. If you like what you heard here today, I invite you to subscribe and share, and please do come back again. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.